On today's show, I'll explain the non-aggression principle to someone who works for the Department of Homeland Security. I'm dead serious. Hey there, everyone. Today, that's not even today. It's like 3:30 in the morning on what was Friday when I woke up and will be Saturday, the wee hours of Saturday when I go to bed between October 29th and October 30th. And I'm up late recording this monologue. I actually just got back from Boston, but I need to get this show all set up so I can get it converted and posted sometime during the day tomorrow to honor a commitment I made to today's guest, who was trying to get some PR for a project and an idea. So I had a couple very interesting conversations with some very different people today. In the morning, I wound up talking with a man named Steve Ressler, who is the founder of a social networking website for government employees called GovLoop. Steve is also the organizer of today's Government Does Not Suck rally. I offered him some PR in exchange for some polite disagreement on the show, and I have to say it was very polite, it was very civil. See what I did there? And as you listen to our discussion, you'll see that there's places where we could launch off into philosophical debates about positive versus negative rights. I skip all that stuff. And I think some of you might find some of his responses to be a little bit circuitous and maybe even a little bit vacuous, just to throw in a couple words that I'm going to be teaching to some young folks tomorrow in an SAT class. But very, very polite guy, and I feel like he is well-intentioned, and we had an interesting conversation, and that will be coming up a little bit later in the show. But I want to combine those thoughts with some reflections on a conversation that I had in the afternoon. So today, and when I say today, I just mean all in this giant span of time that I've been awake for. We're really talking about yesterday morning at this point, like 20 hours ago, when this day started, but we're going to call it today. So this afternoon, Jason Osborne and I went to Boston to go see the Austrian economist, he's affiliated with the Mises Institute, guy named Bob Murphy, give a seminar. And there was also another guy named Bob, who's an Austrian economist, who runs a blog, but he seemed kind of secretive, so I'm not going to give you his last name. And the truth is, at this point, I don't remember it anyway. So waterboard me all you want. All I can tell you is his name was Bob. He has a blog. He had some really sharp-looking shoes on. So the four of us are sitting just at a table in this restaurant in downtown Boston, chatting it up before the seminar. And we start talking about this thing that happened in Yemen, this bomb scare event. And I think somebody at the table said something to the effect of, well, isn't it interesting how this kind of thing always happens before an election? Which is pretty astute. I mean, that's true. There usually is some kind of scare or panic or questionable event that happens right before people are getting ready to run into their little booths there and check their boxes. So from there, the conversation didn't really get conspiratorial, but we started talking a little bit about compartmentalization. That if there are certain secretive or covert or black operations going on within the government, who really knows what? And is it possible that people are doing things and they have absolutely no idea what the larger picture is of what they're involved in? I think that that's a valid question. But then from there, we were actually able to expand it out a little bit to the wider concept of government itself. On my show, and I think this happens a lot in our dialogue, we wind up using words like the government or words like the state that are very abstract and very general. And I think it's important to make some distinctions. During the conversation, I said, you know, I really don't think, with respect to compartmentalization, that people don't realize the differences between the types of people who work in government. The example I gave is there's a big difference between your mailman and Zbigniew Brzezinski. If you don't know who that is, I'll put a link to his name in the show notes and you can investigate. You know, there's a big difference between the chairman of the school board and Chairman Mao, even though we could sum that all up under the umbrella term government. And I started trying to think while we were sitting right at the table there, I was trying to think of a way that this could be diagrammed or a way that this could be visualized. And again, I come back to the pyramid. This, you know, like they use for the feudal system, how you had the king at the top and then the lords and then the knights and the priests. And then at the bottom, you had all the serfs, kind of showing by population as you widen out in the pyramid. Well, you know, the feudal system pyramid will work for government. And I think we might need to add a couple of details here. At the top of the pyramid, what we'll call the capstone, the top portion of the pyramid, we have all of the intellectuals, the Brzezinski types, the operators, the really psychopathic, the people who gravitate to that power because they want to have this veneer of legitimacy over their evil doings. Right, now that sounds conspiratorial, but I think if you look at the people who lurk in the shadows of the Obama administration, you know, people like Geithner and Brzezinski and, you know, a bunch of these other guys, and the same is true with Bush and probably all other administrations. Bush had Cheney, which was the most out front any of these people really ever got. Rumsfeld, Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, who was the architect of most of their foreign policy agenda. These people are just out of view. So, but they make up that capstone of the power structure. And then as the pyramid goes down, of course, you have all of the management level bureaucrats and then all of just the people who are doing their jobs. And as you get closer to the bottom, I think you will find more and more people who are really well-intentioned, who really get into teaching or policing, or they go into the military because they have some kind of benevolent intentions. I think that's relatively common. Now, you might not know this about the pyramids, but they didn't always look like how they look today. And I know you're saying, duh. But they were actually far more impressive, according to historical records. The outside around the bottom was probably marble, covering all of the stone, the big pieces of stone. And then at the top, some of the pyramids actually had this gold facade veneer on them. And it was very shiny and luminous, and it lit up the whole top of the pyramid. And I kind of think of that as, you know, the people like Obama, the guy who's going to bring change and hope to America, or Bush, the kind of guy that you'd like to have a beer with. But because these are elected officials, they put that veneer on what really is in the capstone of that pyramid, which is just pure evil. And let's get really imaginative here for a minute. Affixed to this gold coating is a lightning rod. If we think about all of the scrutiny that the political leaders, the political frontmen are subjected to throughout history, they are really the lightning rod for the agenda of these authoritarian sociopaths who hide in the shadows behind them or behind that luminous veneer. In the history books, you'll hear all about Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Roosevelt. You will not see the name Colonel Edward House mentioned once. You will not see names like Cecil Rhodes. They'll talk all about Jimmy Carter's foreign policy with respect to Afghanistan. The name Zbigniew Brzezinski will not be mentioned once. A couple of people, I mean, you know, creep out of the shadows once in a while. Henry Kissinger. But these people are always hidden from scrutiny as these unimpressive frontmen, grinning idiot politicians absorb all of the lightning when, you know, just about everything they try to do winds up being some horrific disaster. Underneath it all, the good intentions, the morality of decent people is used to hold everything up. That's fair. So today we have Steve, who is a well-intentioned fellow somewhere near the foundation of that government pyramid. And I wanted to try to introduce him to the foundation of our pyramid of philosophy, which is the non-aggression principle. So I'm going to use a clip from our friends at Free Talk Live, who talked about this Government Doesn't Suck rally a few days ago, to set up my discussion
this particular
with
rally,
Steve.
Being people that watch Jon Stewart would be folks who maybe initially were pretty excited about Barack Obama and now are less than enthusiastic. Wouldn't you think?
I would think so. It stands to reason.
So a nice ripe crowd for the ideas of liberty. So that's going to be happening this weekend. But what is particularly amusing is what is happening in, I guess, not in tandem, but there's a group of people that are going to hold a rally to sort of bleed off the Jon Stewart crowd.
Okay.
They're holding a rally simultaneously, or as they're calling it, a march. The Government Doesn't Suck march.
What?
Oh, this is one of the best stories I've heard so far. And you can look at it from different perspectives, but the Washington Post Federal Eye reporting that amid growing dissatisfaction with federal employees, a group of younger, web-savvy feds are planning to march on Saturday in defense of their coworkers on the sidelines of Jon Stewart's rally to restore sanity. Organizers of the Government Doesn't Suck March, that's what they're calling it, were inspired in part by last week's Washington Post poll that revealed widespread negative perceptions of federal workers.
Huh.
Why would that be?
Just federal workers, mind you.
Why would people think things negative about the feds? Anyway, so the march organizer, Steve Ressler, who's the founder of GovLoop, which is a social networking website for public servants, he's founded this. He says, "We hear a day in and day out. The government sucks. Federal employees are lazy and their positions are redundant. It's time to turn the tables and remind the world that government employees just happen to be people. People that don't suck."
The people may very well not suck. Some of them may. I don't know. I wouldn't claim to know these folks. What I would claim is that people that work for a bureaucratic organization are incentivized to act in a bureaucratic fashion. And bureaucracies suck. So people working within the bureaucracies suck. They may very well be good individuals that tell the truth, treat their kids good, love their spouse, and whatever it is that they do that would make a person good. But they work for an organization that improperly services its clientele.
Literally sucking off of the productivity of the people in the voluntary society, of the people that interact with one another on a consensual basis. We don't steal from our clients. We offer them a service, a product, in return for a consideration of their money or gold or silver or something like that. The government doesn't work that way. Most people work that way. You and I, most of us, most of you listening to this, we all interact consensually with one another, but the government doesn't. So literally, they're like a parasite. And that doesn't mean that people believe that they're parasites or think about that. And you're right, Mark, they may be very, very nice folks in their personal life. But what they're doing is just backwards. And it sucks. It does suck. And I think this is particularly interesting because, well, these people they must be feeling some kind of ostracism, don't you think? In order to come out and have this huge, well, I don't know how huge it'll be. We'll find out, right? In order to have this march, and it's probably not going to be that hard to get government employees out.
They're not going to get paid for it, though, right?
That's true.
And it's going to be during the work day.
On a Saturday? No.
Oh, is that a Saturday?
Not for a federal government worker. But yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be that hard to get government people to show up to a Washington, D.C. march. But it's interesting, you know.
They're holding it at the right place, at the right time.
Are they getting razzed by their friends for being government employees? What's happening to these people?
I would like to address the government employees are a bunch of parasites statement. Okay, so Government employees do all kinds of services that are useful and things that would exist in the marketplace. There would be protection organizations and forms of military and policing organizations.
There'd be roads, likely.
There would be roads. There would be firefighters. There would be, I don't know, you name your government bureaucracy.
And water delivery.
Some of them would certainly exist in a free market. Others, I don't think would. The IRS, no, there would not be an IRS in a free market.
But they wouldn't be parasites then.
Right. They wouldn't be parasites because they would be providing a service. What they're providing a service now. They're just providing that service under a different set of...
You can't refuse it.
Yeah, right. I can't decide, you know, which firefighting organization I want or which...
Good luck starting your own police department.
Right.
And competing with them.
Because the police department that's there currently is a monopoly-funded organization. Even if I wanted, and I could get additional security at my house, I could hire them. I'd still have to pay for the cops. So, these are the problems with them. So, are these policing organizations as efficient as they could be? Absolutely not. Not even close.
Not until they're funded in a consensual manner in a marketplace where they're subject to competition.
Right. So that's what you mean when you say parasite. But these people do provide services that people want and need.
Your wife is a former government worker.
I have ex-girlfriends, former government worker. Yes.
Everybody deserves to be forgiven for being a parasite.
No. There is no crime in being a government worker, Ian.
There is a crime in that. Yeah,
no,
you're going along to get along with with criminality. You're going.
So
along.
Are you when you use the government roads and you
no,
deign
I don't collect
to use,
a paycheck from the government.
You pay their taxes. You give them money
out of fear.
Steve Wrestling.
Hi, Steve. This is Brett Benat. How are you?
Good. Good. How's it going, man?
It's going good. We'll get started right away here, and I wanted to give you a couple minutes to explain what you were doing and why, and then I'll let you know where I'm coming from, and maybe we can discuss it a little bit.
Yeah, so basically, I'm Steve Ressler. I'm the founder of GovLoop.com, and basically it's a social network for people that work in and around government. There's 35,000 members, federal, state, local government employees across the country, and basically... the thing we're doing is we're doing a rally on Saturday, and it's called the Government Doesn't Suck Rally. And basically, our point is, actually, I don't know if you've seen this survey, but 2 weeks ago, Washington Post did a survey that said over half of citizens think government employees are lazy, incompetent, overpaid, underqualified. And actually, last year, there was a Government Sucks Rally. So a rally saying how much government sucks. And basically, as a third-generation public servant, we're basically doing a rally to defend ourselves a little bit, that we don't suck, that we are smart, competent people. There are PhDs from the best universities working at National Institute of Health on breast cancer. We have PhDs working that are rocket scientists. We have really smart, competent people that are on the borders every day trying to protect our country. And we're basically kind of defending ourselves as we are government employees and we don't suck.
What do you think is creating this public sentiment that, like, I really don't put much faith in public opinion polls. As far as I'm concerned, there's nothing. The majority having an opinion doesn't necessarily make that opinion valid. I mean, when 99.9% of the planet believed that the Earth was flat, it was round. But I'm curious why you think there is this sentiment amongst the public that the government sucks.
Yeah, and it's actually something that's changed over time. So I always use the analogy, everyone hears a lot, good enough for government work, right? And that's supposed to be a bad thing. And actually back in the day, in the 50s, that was a sign of quality. So actually big companies would talk to a vendor and, you know, a Lockheed Martin or whoever would say, well, we did this for government. And GE would say, well, if we did it for government, it's good enough for us. It's good enough for government work, it's good enough for us. And somehow that's changed. So, you know, 60 years later, both on the left or the right, this isn't really about politics. Most people don't see government employment as a great place to work, a great place for smart people to be. I know all my friends that are do-gooders, they want to work for a nonprofit and Save Darfur or teach, you know, a nonprofit like Teach for America. A lot of my friends when I graduated who were into finance, you know, wanted to work on Wall Street or consulting. But very few people that are passionate and say, hey, I want to work for EPA and work on making our environment better. I want to come work for Homeland Security and help protect our country. I think we kind of need to restore that call to public service and a little bit of the pride in being a public servant.
Well, I don't think it has anything to do. Like, it sounds a little bit as if you are defending the actual people who work in government. And, you know, I've known plenty of people who were – government employees. And, you know, certainly just like any profession, there's some people who are really decent people. There's some people who are not. There's some people who are really competent and intelligent. There's some people who are not. I mean, you find that in every profession. But perhaps the problem is not with the people in government. Perhaps the reason why people are starting to notice this, especially, I mean, you would agree that this has been a trend that's really taken place in the last 15 years or so, right? Where there's more of this negative response and negative feeling about government, right?
Yep. Yep.
Maybe that has something to do with the proliferation of information in the last 15 years, that people can see the government working much in a much closer way than they used to. And they see that there is, in many places, there is a tremendous amount of inefficiency. There is, at the politician level, there is a tremendous amount of corruption. And there's also just such a litany of broken promises that I think with the arrival of the internet and this additional scrutiny of government, and not the people who are, you know, working at the post office, or not the people who are, you know, doing these behind the scenes jobs, but the people at the top are certainly giving the government a very bad name, because they don't really appear to be able to get anything done. They're not particularly honest. But I don't think when you look at people who want to exercise power over others, like the senators, the president, the governors, the psychological profile of those people, like, I want a job where I can, for lack of a, just to be frank, impose my will on other people by the force of law, those don't tend to be good people. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people who work for government who certainly probably are good people, but they're all kind of mixed in together with this this problem of the, yep, the corruption and the disappointment, these things that they see.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit on a great point that I think, especially in the public, people, it's really hard to separate politics and governing. So, and I'll explain that a little bit. So, you know, GovLoop, you know, is for people that work in government, right? So these are, like you said, you know, bureaucrats behind the scene. They're not making the decision of whether we should do healthcare or not. That's a political decision driven by politics. They're the ones that, once it's been decided by politicians and voters and lobbyists, they're the ones that say, well, I guess everyone told us that we're doing this. We probably need a really good technology system to do this. We probably need a website. We probably need a call center. We probably need all these logistical items for this to work. And I think people often forget the two. So, you know, I've seen this with government employees where they'll run into someone, they say, you work at HHS, Health and Human Services, you're evil because you're pro-healthcare and this. And, you know, the politics of government employees swings both ways. And the employee is always like, that's not my decision. That's politics, and I agree with you. I hate politics, especially, you know, these days with all, you know, all the lobbying, all the special interest groups. That really upsets me. But I really think the issue of, you know, once those decisions are made, you know, let's make it as efficient as possible. Let's run. You know, we're doing Social Security. That's already been decided whether we should change it or not. That's not my, you know, I don't like that question. I like the question of, how do we deliver payments faster? How do we make the system really efficient? Maybe we can save money by, instead of sending those paper notices on how much you get on Social Security, maybe we can do that in an email form and save money, or a really good website. So those are the questions I'm interested in.
So, I've talked to other people like you before, who were state or federal employees who expressed a genuine interest in, you know, wanting to do their job well, wanting to be efficient, caring about what they do. They got into this line of work because they care about the people they could serve. I think it's especially true with teachers. And my focus has been on education. And back to what I was saying earlier about how it's not a problem necessarily with the people who are populating these bureaucracies per se. It's a problem with the structure itself. Now, I do this show called School Sucks, which is one of the reasons why I was interested in talking to you about, you know, because I'm really talking about the government school system. And one of my arguments for why the public education system has failed in so many ways is because of the nature of the system itself. There is no way for people not to fund it.
And even though at the operational level, at the service provider level, you can have people who are really, people care about the environment and they say, oh, I should work for the EPA. People care about children. They say, I should go teach in the public school system. People care about having safe communities. They say, I should go be a police officer. But when they get into these bureaucracies, and I've had this feedback from people as well, they just feel strangled. It's like almost in many ways the incentives in so many cases are to fail, because that's how these bureaucracies get more money, by showing that they couldn't get a job done with a certain budget. I mean, I live in New Hampshire, so we watched this with the Big Dig down in Boston. It ran billions of dollars over budget, and in every failure they just said, well, we don't have enough money. So the problem with school and all other bureaucracies that people who are incentivized to compete, people who are incentivized to deliver quality, the bureaucracies don't have to deal with this because people don't have a choice about whether they fund them or not. And I think that even with the best intentions, that leads to, at least at the management level, a culture of inefficiency and a culture of not having incentives to deliver anything of quality. And that's in spite of the best intentions of people like yourself. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And one actual nuance I would say, too, when people often talk about this to me is I agree with it. I think part of it is the scale that government operates at. It's hard to just say government versus private sector when you're thinking of, Homeland Security is almost 200,000 people. And there's very few private sector organizations that employ 200,000 people that work on such a diversity of missions, but TSA screeners, Coast Guard, immigration, emergency management. So just the scope of that is huge, right? It's a very complex problem you're solving. Can you think of the big organizations you deal with in your day-to-day life, and they actually suck too, right? Like I just, tried to talk the city to change my credit card limit. They passed me to seven people in this big monolithic organization, and it's actually pretty inefficient. Whenever I try to call Comcast, big organization, I don't have that much choice on my cable. I have a couple choices, I go DirecTV. I could cancel, but it's not 100% full and open competition. The quality service isn't great. So I think I always tell people, I think it is somewhat structural, and we definitely need to improve the structure. But part of it is because whenever you deal with huge, complex problems on such a big scale, it's actually really hard to do it well. I mean, when you think of private sector companies that are trying to do the same, they're often not, the Googles that everyone loves, because Google's 10,000 people and they focus mostly on search. It's a lot different than working on, big, complex, 100,000 people problems.
Well, I agree with what you're saying, that when organizations, especially corporations, which we can see that, and that's a problem that I, in many ways, pin to government as well. Corporations, through their lobbyists, through their, K Street people, will go to the government and say, can you use, your power to create protections for us? And we see this with Chrysler. We saw this with Citi in the early 1980s, and they just did it again, where the government sets up a safety net in many ways to say, well, you can behave like us. The very corporate structure itself allows individuals in business to shield themselves from consequences. Now, small businesses don't operate that like that, but the good news about Comcast, the good news about Citibank, or any of these other organizations, these private organizations that I could have a problem with, if I decide that I don't want to do business with them anymore, they're not going to threaten me. I'm not going to wind up in jail for not paying Comcast. I'm going to lose that service, but there is no threat. And that's a problem with government, because that's kind of like the final say. If you do not pay for these things, and that was what I was saying the problem was with school. If property owners in a certain school district don't want to use the schools, like they might not even have kids. If they don't pay for it, they're going to get threatened, and ultimately they're going to lose their house. So when you think about doing, for lack of a better word, business like that, that really takes out any consideration for quality. If there's no way not to pay somebody, like if there was no way not to pay Comcast, if I was entered into a contract with Comcast or Sprint based on the landmass that I was born on, I don't think their services would be as good as they are. So the fact that there's no way to opt out, and just to be clear, because I didn't really give you my position here, but I would, most people that I talk to would say that you're anti-government. Now, only a bomb-throwing lunatic would suggest that society doesn't need to be organized in some way. And there's no problem with the idea of governance, but this organization that can basically, excuse the phraseology here, but can pretty much conduct business at the point of a gun is really, really problematic. And I think that's why we see a lot of the problems that we see in government.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that I agree with you in the sense of, I think focusing on governance is what I'm passionate about, and I think you are too. It's I think there's core services for our country that as a citizen want delivered to me because they're, you know, human rights. You know, like I want, you know, I want when I have a fire that it, you know, that someone comes and extinguishes that fire, and I don't get charged, you know, I don't have to pay an extra $1,000 if I want them in the next 10 minutes. I want, you know, efficient police. I want these big issues like, you know, border security, terrorism, clean water. You know, you want, those are things I want. I want my tap water to be good, not bad.
These are, yeah,
and,
exactly. All people want these things. Absolutely.
All people want these things. And my point, kind of the govloop.com point, which, you know, if any listeners out there who work in government, please join, is I want smart people tackling those problems. And I think there already are. There's a lot of smart people working every day trying to solve those problems in federal, state, local government. And I think we should honor them and focus on that, as well as there is a higher level issue too of politics, which has a lot more issues. And let's try not to confuse the two.
Well, I think that, you know, as far as what we're discussing here and in the concept of governance, I taught in school for years, and I taught history. And because I taught history, I got very interested in politics, and I spent time on the left and I spent time on the right. And the problem with the political views that are considered to be like socially acceptable in this country, which is a very, very narrow spectrum. And when these people get to Washington, there's no difference between any of them at all, as far as I'm concerned, with respect to ethics. And, you know, I would say, oh, all right, I get this political point of view, and then it would switch to the other side. But everything was very foggy. Everything was very confusing. And what I eventually found is that there was nothing grounding them. There was no foundation. There was no principle. There was nothing that was holding them together. They were just incredibly inconsistent and frustrating points of view. And I think that where we come from, people like me, is that there is such a thing as, you know, axioms, and there is such a thing as principles that beliefs can be based on. Like people, when these political discussions get going, they'll say, oh, well, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I'm entitled to my opinion. You're entitled to yours. And it just is a great way to prevent you know, an uncomfortable discussion from becoming a meaningful one. But we do realize that we live in a world of axioms. Nobody argues. Nobody's entitled to an opinion about the sum of 2 + 2. Nobody's entitled to an opinion about, you know, what happens when you jump off a cliff. Is gravity real or not? And we say if there are principles and there are axioms in math and science, it might be worthwhile to pursue the same idea with ethics. And I think that I finally found a sort of principle, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, that is what we should move to the center of society as far as governance for all people is concerned, something that is universal, something that can be consistently applied to everybody. Now, what this means for the future of government, I don't know, but the idea, I mean, there's always been some idea at the center of society. And for most of our history, it was some kind of religious mysticism, and then the nobility and divinity of kings and emperors. And now when they kind of, you know, science took over and they said, okay, it's not the will of God. Now it's the will of the people. We've just seen that all of these ideas that people try to put at the center of society are not really getting the job done. And for the survival of our species, one idea that I think should move to the center of society is an ethical one, that no individual has any right, that this would basically be the ultimate moral failure for one individual to initiate force against another individual. That force could be theft, it could be threats, it could be, you know, anything where one person is violating or interfering with the property of another person. Now, to get this to sink in, it might take generations, but this is definitely something that's worth starting to think about. And I believe that that's axiomatic, that no one can say, no, it's okay for this person to aggress against this person if they have this outfit on or if they have this job title. So this non-aggression principle is the basis that we approach politics, economics, ethics, all of these ideas with. Now, what that means for the future of government as it exists now, I don't know. But this is the direction we'd like to start seeing our world move in, towards the acceptance, the embrace, the understanding of this idea.
Exactly. I mean, I think what I like about your framework, the piece that resonates with my idea, is I think it's about having sane conversations about big problems our society faces. And it's not about politics, right or left. It's not about me or you or public or private. It's there's goods of our society that we need to function well. It's important to have safe food, a simple one. I just went to a restaurant, right? It's worth it for me. I want the food that comes out to be safe so I don't get sick. And that trickles all the way down from thinking through, well, I probably want my waiter to be healthy because he's handling my food. I want there to be some rules and responsibility of the restaurant to make sure that the food's secure and safe. There's some responsibility on my own self to check and vet the restaurant. But all in all, you look at the problem, safe food, that's a good for our country, right? That's a thing everyone would want. I think let's have a sane conversation around it, not just a right-left political debate or public-private, government sucks, corporations are great, or vice versa. Let's just address the problem in a sane way and with competent people looking at the issue. So that's, to me, what excites me, and that's kind of think with our government doesn't suck march, we're basically saying, let's have a sane conversation about government operations and the people that work at it. Let's not have a crazy discussion about overpaid, underpaid, lazy, dumb, incompetent. Like you said, these are real people. There are, working hard every day trying to address these major issues, and we should honor that in the same way we honor government workers like teachers that are always honored.
One of the things that I'm saying that I'm trying to enter into this discussion is that even though you're connected to and maybe even reaching out to people who right now work for this organization called the government, history has shown us that the way something was being done at any given time was not usually, almost consistently, not the best way that it could have been done. So when we point out what I believe is an ethical problem with the institution of government itself that most people working with the government or for the government never realize in their whole life about this initiation of force problem, government itself is a 5,000 or 6,000-year-old technology. And our suggestion is that there's people like you who do care about wanting to have a better society. We have seen consistently throughout history that the attempt to centrally plan these goals just leads to massive failure and in some cases disaster. I mean, the old saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Governments in the 20th century killed about, and I could send you, you're not on Skype, but I could email you the link to this. Governments in the 20th century killed about 200 million of their own citizens, not by saying, let's go kill our citizens. But if you look at like what Mao tried to do in China, I mean, communism is the ultimate effort to centrally plan programs for people. So I want to kind of combine an ethical idea that is applied consistently, or I hope someday will be applied consistently to all people, it's wrong to initiate force against others, with the good intentions of people like yourself and the good intentions of a lot of these people that I meet working in education. I've had a few friends in the past who were police officers, and while I have this strong anti-government attitude, I recognize that there are decent people who are doing these jobs, and I just hope that they can realize that even if they're not going to switch careers, even if they're not going to quit whatever bureaucracy they work for and try to start some free enterprise solution to whatever problem they're pursuing, I hope we can at least enter this into the discussion that there's always another way, and people become teachers, they become police officers because they feel like that's the only path for doing what they want to do. And I really just hope we can open this up to see the possibilities for the future. This isn't something, we're not talking about pushing a button or flipping a switch. We're hoping that, you know, a new type of thinking can emerge out of what we already have. As you know, the government itself is in a huge amount of trouble. It's the U.S. government is one of the, at the federal level anyway, is one of the most insolvent organizations in the entire world right now, maybe behind Greece. And there's a couple states like California that are even starting to catch up just with how mismanaged they have been. And in many cases, they're ripping themselves apart. We just want, we're not talking about revolution, we're not talking about overthrow, we're certainly not talking about anything violent. That is what we are most adamantly opposed to. What we're talking about is planting the seeds for, you know, ideas for the future and talking with people who do have good intentions about what might be next. And that's really my primary goal here.
Great. And I really appreciate you having me on the show, and I thank the audience for listening and actually and really respecting the viewpoint of, I think we're in agreement that there are a lot of smart people working hard every day in government. I think I like your ideas of let's also think through how to tackle these big issues. So really appreciate you having me on the show. And for the audience members that work in government, go ahead and check out govloop.com. It takes 30 seconds to join.
All right, and tell the people at govloop.com to check out schoolsucksproject.com and see if they can find any interesting ideas, and I would be willing to continue the conversation with anybody who contacts me, Steve.
Great, thanks so much.
All right, have a good day.
All right, you too.
Bye. So that's how that whole thing went, and even though I started pursuing these government doesn't suck people as kind of a novelty idea for the show, along with the cute marquee of school sucks versus government doesn't suck, it actually kind of got me thinking. Then, of course, you know, we talk about these abstractions like the state and government and only individuals exist. But our real opponent here, I think this is important to remember, is not people, but ideas. And those ideas that infect people from a very, very young age, from the very beginning of their education. At the beginning of this show, I was talking about this pyramid, and I always like to think of things in terms of structures when it's applicable. And one of the reasons why I'm so opposed to voting is because we are never going to realize a free world. We're never going to realize complete liberty by finding the most violent organization in the entire world and trying to work at it from the top down. We work from the bottom up. We start with ourselves. We start on an individual level, with our person, with our purpose. And once all of that is solid enough as a foundation, we can build the kind of relationships that are needed as the second step in that structure. And then on top of that, someday we can put something civil. But in that foundation, trust me from my own personal experience, that personal foundation, some cracks need to be dealt with. Sometimes there's some new ones. And as far as I can tell, that's a part of life. But it's a good chance, just like we talked about in the series of shows called Escape from Imagination Land, it's a good chance to develop some empathy and some understanding and ultimately some forgiveness for others. And we don't go out and talk to other people with the intention of shaming them or embarrassing them, but with the intention of reaching out to them. And what started here, on my part, as kind of a novelty idea, actually turned into a story about a human being who's trying to do what he believes are the right things. If we trust Steve, and he seemed like a pretty sincere guy to me, we realize that even in a place like the Department of Homeland Security, there are some decent, well-intentioned folks. And it kind of backs up one of the ideas that I've been putting forward on this show all along, that most people are driven by a desire to be good. For so long, unfortunately, this has been used to just control people and get them to do all kinds of evil, wacky shit. And this goes beyond just the people in government. I mean, this certainly includes those who put costumes on and kidnap or shoot innocent people, but it also includes the folks who are stomping on their political opponents at campaign rallies. People who tell themselves they're good while being animated by these horrible, dangerous ideas. So for me, in my own dealings, it's important to remember that it's not a struggle against people. It's a struggle against ideas.
because most people are moral. And we need to remember that as far as ideas go, we have a moral idea that no rational person can possibly argue against. As Steve just demonstrated for all of us. Thanks. Hey, one more quick thing. If you're young and you didn't recognize that awesome piece of music that was used for the outro in this podcast, it's from a 1985 film called Top Gun, starring Tom Cruise, about the heroics of the Air Force. It's by Harold Faltermeyer, who also did Beverly Hills Cop, and Steve Stevens. We're taking it away from the military, and we're claiming it for nonviolence. Tell your friends.